Welcome back to another episode of the Bounce Back Bogey Podcast. Boys, we've made it to week 11. It's almost 3 months of the greatest podcast on the interweb. We also have a very, very special guest this evening. He's gay. He has a special connection to classical music. He has a lot of interesting things about him. His name's John McClodic. No, I'm just kidding. Our special guest tonight is John, but none of that was true. He is a mini tour grinder. He is a ex-PGA Tour Canada player. Some would say he has dual personalities when he drinks and when he's sober. But he remains one of our favorite people in the world. So we're very happy to have him. But with that said, let's go to Braden Brown right now. How was your weekend, buddy?
It was good. Week started on Tuesday. I got a root canal, which I wasn't looking forward to, but it wasn't too bad. So my understanding of a root canal is they take like your root and all the nerves out and they put the dead one back in. So a few days later, I shouldn't have been feeling anything in my tooth, but it started getting really sore. So I don't know, got another dentist appointment this week, but that kind of kicked things off on the wrong foot for the week. But this weekend was good. Had one of Sabrine's teammates from Minnesota come up and meet Theo and stayed the weekend and some other friends.
How was she?
How was she what, Craig? What are you asking?
She hot?
I'm not gonna answer. She's in a relationship.
Yeah, just send me your Insta after.
All right. I was thinking maybe she could be a future pod guest, so we could.
But yeah, let's do it.
Okay, good stuff. But yeah, I didn't really watch too much golf. Watched a little bit of March Madness is going on. I'm not a big basketball fan in general, but anytime it's like a one and done, like a lot of these guys aren't going pro, so it's like their Super Bowl kind of thing. It's exciting anytime. That's happening. So watch a bit of that. But yeah, that's about it.
I love that. How's your bracket doing?
I picked a pretty chalky bracket. So all the ones and two seeds moved on. But I'm not going to like wow anyone with my picks so far.
You have a chance to win Jaren's pool?
I think so. I picked UConn with two of my brackets, Houston with one, and Purdue with one. So definitely live, but it just depends on if the people ahead of me have the same final four.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Craig, what'd you get up to this weekend? I know you played a golf tournament today. How did that go?
Yeah, I got 2 weeks of content to get through since I missed last week, but I'll start with the golf tournament. Wasn't good, but I kind of knew that. The good news is there's a bunch of holes under construction. So it was par three. So that saved the scoring average. So instead of shooting like 80, I shot 73. So good time for a blow up round. And then actually that's probably my average now. So yeah. But the funny thing is like, I've been drinking way too much lately. And I think I had alcohol withdrawals when I was warming up. Like everything was shaking. My hands were shaking. And then I also haven't played nearly enough golf. I think 4 or 5 times I was lining up a putt. There goes my headphone. I was lining up a putt and I gripped my putter like I grip like an iron. Like I didn't hold it like a putter. Like I don't know. It's pretty funny. I've never had that before. And then anyway, last weekend, sorry for missing the podcast. Like I said, I was drinking a lot and I was probably drunk for like 2 days straight. Consistently. And then I got a funny story from work though. As I said, I work at a private club. I won't say which one. One of the, I guess we'll say like more well up members, you know what I mean? If you know a private club, there's like boards and there's presidents. Anywhere, there's this one guy who's very high up. He comes into the pro shop one day and he looks at us. There's like three of us there and he goes, I'm not going to say names, so I'll just say like, where's Jim? Freaking out. So we're like, he's down teaching a lesson. I don't know. He'll be back in a bit. And he goes, I'm going to kill him. And we kind of look at him funny and we're kind of thinking he's joking. So we laugh. And then he goes, no, I'm going to kill him. And we're like, oh, like what happened? He goes, I went out to Beech Grove last Thursday with some friends that took me out and I hit the ball left off the tee for 13 holes straight. And then I looked down at my driver, and during our last club fingering, he shut the club face. And we're like, don't you just look down at your club? Like, we didn't say this, but like, in all honesty, how helpless is somebody that they don't look down at their driver and grab their wrench and fix it? So he just flipped out. Best part was the driver was on standard, which is what they agreed on. And he's had this issue in the past, and exact same thing. He was going to kill the pro, and he claimed that he was slicing it because he set it to slice. So the pro's like, no, it's set to standard. And he goes, no, S is slice. And he's no club manufacturer in their right mind would put slice as a golf setting. So that's what I'm dealing with. And yeah.
Anything else you want to touch on? You know, you messaged us. You messaged us last night, and you said you had a bad range session, and you kind of knew.
Oh, what was my today. God! Yeah, sorry, Jesus.
Walk us through what a bad range session looks like.
Okay, so my plan for the week was to go to the Canucks game Friday night, like go to bed after the game, and instead I was drinking downtown until about 3 a.m. So mm-hmm. then I was gonna play golf. The reason I was gonna go to bed was that I wanted to like put in a good range session and like go play golf, because I haven't played 18 holes since, I have no idea, it's been a long time. Anyway, instead I go to Riverway, and I'm hitting balls there, and I need to show you guys my camera roll. Braden will have to put this up on socials. I like looking at my swing way too much. It's definitely a fault, and right now it's not, quite often it's not doing even remotely close to what I want. And when I start panicking, I start looking at it more and more and more. I was there within an hour. I think I had 75 videos on my phone. It is so fucked up. Like, I'm bad at this, but I've never been this bad. This is all from yesterday. That's a lot of swing videos. So yeah, I was chasing a feel. And then the best part is, I got home late last night, couldn't sleep very well, because like I was like scared of embarrassing myself today. And this morning I was watching George Gankus and every instructional video I could find, like just trying to find something that made sense. So
did you find anything on in like the pre-round range slash or anything before your round?
I kind of thought I was going to be okay today when I was warming up, but the first tee, if you've played where, so today we happen to play at Capilano. That's where the tournament was at. I haven't played there much, I don't know. And there's basically a bunker on the left that is never in play. I snap hooked the ball so hard it hit the trees and it popped out, and it was near that bunker that no one's ever been near. So yeah, it was quick left. It was a AOC ball.
Nice. Hot and left.
And now the person that everybody wants to hear from, Mr. Johnny Milk, how's your weekend? I know you're going through some life changes. You just moved back from Mexico after being gone for a couple of years. And you're living somewhere else now. What's going on? Tell us about your life.
Yeah. First off, thanks for having me on, boys. It's a pleasure to be on the Bounce Back Bogey pod. I'm going to be really bad at this, just so give me a little bit of clearance here.
It's okay. Everyone else we invited couldn't make it, so you were the...
Yeah. What were you asking me? What we did? Oh, what my weekend was? Yeah, so I was in... I'm bad at this. I was in...
This is such good...
Okay, John, literally every episode doesn't go like this necessarily, but every time I'm like, this isn't going to sound good, and then Craig edits it and we actually sound confident. So
but I'm leaving all this in. Like, John is spitting content right now. He can't even get through how his weekend is.
You asked me that question, I like forgot literally everything. I forgot my name. Holy hell.
It's nerve-wracking being on a pod with 7 followers.
Yeah.
No, anyways, thanks for the nice intro there, I guess, and having me on, boys. My weekend's been all right. Just like you said, life changes. I was down in Mexico for almost 3 months, just playing, practicing golf, working on the game, getting away from the snow. up here in Canada. And yeah, so I moved back on, I got back on Thursday. So, and then I'm now, I was just packing up my stuff at my my old place, and I moved in with a buddy of mine, James Casorso. So to
also, we're gonna have to have Jimmy on one day.
Yeah, you should. You'd love to, I'm sure. So
do you think so for our listeners, do you think you could give them like a quick rundown of your life since university?
Oh.
Like where you've lived and where you played.
Yeah. Okay. So
I couldn't even answer how his weekend went. This is gonna be a struggle.
What happened after university? So graduated university. I think I turned pro right out of university. Worked at a golf shop in Kelowna for a couple of years and just played golf locally, like Vancouver Golf Tour kind of stuff and some club pro stuff. And then over the winters, I started going to Phoenix. First year I went down by myself. It's kind of a funny story. I didn't have a place to live, didn't have a golf course to play at. And I was just like, I'm going to figure it out. And, and then I did.
What did the first night look like on your way down there? You went down there without a place to stay?
I didn't have a rental, but I was going to stay the winter. But I called a member from my home course and I was like, can I stay with you for a week? He's like, yeah, no problem. And then when I was down there, I just like figured it out, I guess, and ended up getting a place to stay and practicing at the Raven. So I did that for about 2 years, winters in Phoenix, back home in Kelowna, and then playing golf tournaments like Vancouver Golf Tour. I would go to Q School for the Canadian Tour, but the first couple times never really got through, never did much damage there. And I'd play some Monday qualifiers, still same thing, going back down to Phoenix over the winter, just practicing, playing mini tours down there. And then 2019, I went to Q School for PGA Tour Canada and got conditional status. So then kind of chased the Canadian Tour, got an exemption, made a cut, got some more starts out of that, but never really did much with it. Then I did a winter in Spain, another winter in Phoenix, and this year winter in Mexico. And and that was kind of during COVID. So like back to Vancouver Golf Tour, there was some Canadian Tour stuff, just like sign up based, but yeah, that was about it. Mini tour grinder pretty much.
No, I want to go back to John, but I would just want to touch on the Valspar really quick. So we don't skip over it. Peter Malnati won with a yellow ball and Cam Young came second. And that was the whole week. So back to John's content. I didn't give his intro enough justice to just how good John is at golf. He had a great university career and then had a lot of success on the Vancouver Golf Tour, had a lot of good finishes, was a pretty decent pro on PGA Tour Canada, and he hits it just about as good as anyone you'll ever see. And it's very confusing as to why he's not a millionaire. So we're going to try and get to the bottom of that by the end of this episode.
Where did all your speed go? You used to mash the golf ball, but...
Dude, I don't know, man. I got old, I guess. I don't know. I got old. I stopped going to the gym, like bad combo for hitting it far. Yeah. But I think I got like quite technical, like maybe 3-4 years ago with my swing and trying to like fix technical problems. And then... Mm-hmm. I found out like maybe a year ago because I was like so confused. I'm like, I'm not hitting it far anymore. Like, what's wrong with me kind of thing. And then I found out, I can't remember who, some coach was telling me, like, when you get really technical with your swing, players oftentimes lose speed.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're focusing on like swing mechanics and then kind of forget to just be an athlete and hit it hard.
Mm-hmm. And just to give some overview, you were probably in university swinging in the low to mid 120s, I would say. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think if I went after one, maybe mid 120s, but like kind of low 120, 120-ish kind of and, on course. Yeah.
And then what does it end up dropping down to nowadays?
Dude, I got to 108 at my max. Like my max full swing driver. That's like going after one in the sim too. But I think now I've kind of got some of it back. I'm like kind of cruising at like 114 maybe. Nice. And I can get it to like 118, 119 if I go after one, I guess. But
are you working out again or no?
A little bit, not enough to, like, not enough to say I'm working out, if you know what I mean. But like, right. I go every once in a while. So
I was just gonna say, like, you said you were swinging it so fast in university. What do you think your bench and squat was in university?
A lot higher than now.
Well, I mean, that's kind of I know back then.
Yeah. That is true too. So yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I could probably just get in the gym and stop being a fat piece of shit, but
well, you are a big Goggins carry the boats guy, and I know a few years ago when COVID first happened, you and I did an 800 push-up challenge. Do you remember that? Yeah,
no, 1,000 push-ups.
1,000, yeah. I had to do 800. You had to do 1,000, and I couldn't do it.
What was it? I think we had 24 hours to finish, and I got through them all somehow.
Yeah, you crushed it. I was like a mental and physical bitch. Couldn't do it, but good for you. Craig's on the record saying anyone, if they had like a strong mindset, could just wake up tomorrow and run a marathon.
Which... Okay. Yes and no. So not anyone. Like obviously fat bitch plus size model can't run a marathon, but like any of us tomorrow, you could push through and run a marathon, gun to your head. 100%.
When you say run, do you mean just like finish the distance, or do you mean run the whole time?
Well, like, it has to be like,
can you walk at all?
What's a jogging? Like, what's a light jog pace? Like a very slow pace, I would say, is what, 6 minutes a kilometer?
Yeah. Roughly.
Like, I think I did a half without training last year, and that was at like 5:15. And I was like, I was hurting the next day. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was in a lot of pain, but I was like, gun to my head, I could have done a full.
Yeah, but you're like better athlete, like in better shape than most people. And I know you're saying like,
I'm drinking a Coke right now.
So I'm on the same boat. I'm in the same boat as Craig. And I've actually had that stance before too. Like, I feel like we could wake up tomorrow and run a marathon. But then Brett Tamp, like, basically asked every trainer he knew, and every single one of them said no, like not possible.
Well, we should put it to a test, because Craig's not a good example, because I like actually think he could, but we need like Jord to do it, like someone.
No, because I want to pick somebody who has like that. The whole point is
that dog in him.
That dog.
That's got
and
that
I have
dog
like,
in him.
I'm like 1% like dog. I have no dog, but I'm saying like the fact that people have less dog than me and can't do it is insane.
Fair. Okay. Well, we got to find a test subject that like has the dog, but doesn't like run regularly, just to see.
I'll do it. But the last mile,
Mike doesn't have that dog,
but the last mile of my marathon has to be live streamed during the Bounce Back Bogey podcast.
Deal.
Mike,
yeah, but you work out. So this is like,
you're not running a marathon, Mike. I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
Okay. This is good. This is a good test. Perfect.
I want to ask you, John. So obviously everyone here knows how hard it is to make it as a pro. What, and we've seen how good you hit it day in and day out. What do you think it is that up to this point has caused you not to, you know, make that jump to the next level in your own game?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's pretty, in my opinion, it's pretty simple for me. Like you said, I typically hit my irons pretty well and can wedge it and kind of chip and putt like decently good. Off the tee is where I struggle. I like have definitely struggled like kind of keeping the ball in play, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? I would say that's like kind of what's held me back for sure. And I not the greatest long iron player, I guess, either, but definitely like driver off the tee just kind of keep that thing in play. Is like if I'm hitting driver good, and just like it doesn't even have to be good. It's just got to be in between the trees for me. Like I can play out of the rough for the most part. Like we don't really play long enough rough that it matters typically, but if I just keep it in between the trees, I usually score pretty well. So,
which like, and not to be like a dick, it's got to be like wildly frustrating based off of how good you used to drive it off the tee.
Well, now I hit it like, before I used to hit it like decently far, so
long. Long and straight before.
Yeah, and I could kind of get away with it, hitting a couple squirrely ones because it was like I would hit it far enough. But like now I'm like hitting it short and crooked, and like it just does. It just like blows my mind. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah.
When abouts did that part of your game change?
I don't know if I was ever like super straight with the driver, but like I would say like I don't know, for most of my pro career has kind of been like my downfall, but maybe more so over the last like three or four or five years, getting old.
That's where I kind of wonder, like you said, kind of on your pro career, I wonder if that's just you're playing with better players and it's like a part of your game that in college stood out as like really good. And then when you turn pro, maybe it's something where it's like you go play with, I don't know, these guys that are driving it extremely good. And it's like, holy shit. Like, I don't know. Do you think it's just like the people like you're comparing it to changed?
Could be. Yeah, definitely. I never really thought of that. That's a good question. I mean, Mike has seen it. You've seen a little bit of it, Craig, but when like you go down to Phoenix and play like skins games and mini tour tournaments too, like the cuts to make money on some of these events are like double digits for 3 days, you know, and the winning score is dash 20, like every week, 3 day tournament. So like golf is just so like pro golf is just so saturated with good players. It's like insane. So that could also be like part of it. Like guys are playing on the mini tour and they're good enough to play like the Korn Ferry Tour. So,
Yeah,
it could definitely be that.
Hey, Braden, would you like to comment on anything?
I don't know. No, someone else has a question.
All right, I got a question.
Give it to me.
You had, as Mike said, a good golf career in university, but you also had quite a social career in university. If you could have one night back in university or one moment back socially, what would it be?
Oh, you got to specify like moment back to relive and
like experience a do-over. Again? No, like a do-over. Like what was your lowest?
I mean,
I know what it is.
it's all good. I'll put it out there. So actually, I wasn't in university, but...
Oh, even better.
All of us boys, we went drinking out at the university pub one night, and we were having some beverages, and I maybe had one too many. And I was going down these stairs to go to the bathroom, and Craig's following me. And I guess I tripped. I don't know. I fell, obviously. But like I tried to catch myself and like grab onto the railings. And then I just kept falling forward and just went head first into the fucking concrete at the bottom. And yeah, if that never happened, that would have probably been good for everybody.
You are downplaying this way too much.
Yeah. So he toe-picked off the top step and fell like 8 or 9 steps. Didn't put out his arms, just face planted straight onto the pavement.
Yeah, I think this read a little high, but do you remember what they measured your BAC at the hospital?
Oh, yeah. So I don't know. I can't remember how we got the reading, but apparently my blood alcohol was 0.66.
You can't survive that.
Yeah, I don't think that's even possible. I don't know. I don't think it's true, though. I think, like, we misheard the doctor. Yeah. But me and Brett were both there, I think. And we asked him, and he, like, said that. And we're like, you got to be kidding me. But anyways.
I was with you earlier that night, and I left probably 25 minutes before you, and I was driving home, and I get a call from Brett, and Brett's drunk too, and he goes, John's dead. And I go, what? He's like, yeah, John just fell down the stairs and he's unconscious.
Wasn't it your birthday weekend or something? I know it was, a big party the next day because you were conked out and like couldn't drink anymore.
Oh,
wrong. No. He was at the party in his room with a helmet on.
Yeah, we had a helmet for him.
No, we drank the next day too. That probably wasn't smart either. But what it was that was my first year out of university, and like everybody else was still in university. So I was back visiting for the weekend. So we were going to have a house party and everything. But the funniest part of this whole, well, not really funny, but another part of the story is I'm trying to figure out where I am. I'm in the hospital, obviously, the next morning, and I'm calling the boys, I need a ride to get picked up. So Brett, I can't remember who else. It was three or four guys came and picked me up, and we're walking out of a hospital, and I don't know. You can maybe edit this out, Craig. I don't know. This is good to put in, but
this is the best.
We see our golf coach, who was elderly at the time, and he wasn't doing too well. He was going through some health issues, in the hospital, and we're like, oh, coach, how you doing? And so we go in there, and the best part was is he thought that we all just came to visit him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Poor guy. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, not one of my finest moments, that's for sure.
That's fair. Right. On kind of a similar topic to running a marathon, I know this was before I got to SFU, but I know you had an adventure that involved some running, and it involved potentially hurting yourself. What happened that night, and did you play golf the following week, or what all happened there?
You guys are painting me as not a very not a very good college player, but I don't know, the boys like to have some fun every once in a while, and we're off campus, we're having some drinks again, and I decide at the end of the night it's a good idea to walk home from downtown Vancouver. Ended up starting to run home, and stress fractured my foot a week before regionals.
Just to be clear, he lived in Coquitlam.
Yeah.
I remember I got home at 9 a.m. It was terrible.
I think you're downplaying this again, because apparently you went up to a cab and said I don't know exactly what you said, but you were $20 to go to Coquitlam, and he said no, and then you just started running, and then he comes up to you and he's $40, and you're no, I only have 20, and then you just kept going, and then he came back again and he said, okay, fine, I'll do it for 20, and you said no, and you just left him.
It was something like that, yeah. But I don't know, obviously I had again too many drinks and wasn't thinking too straight, but I think most of us have a story though where we either hiked up the hill at SFU or something stupid trying to get home.
It's just what men do when they're drunk. I never feel tired when I'm drunk and running.
No, that's right? That's a good point. If we do the marathon challenge while drunk, you just don't get tired.
You don't.
For those that listeners that don't know, SFU is up on Burnaby Mountain. It's not a huge mountain or anything, but it's certainly a steep climb. And yeah, I think everyone on the team or all of our friends at some point have taken either a solo or a partner climb back from the bar up the hill. So
I think from downtown where John was, it's about 25 kilometers straight uphill the entire way.
Yeah, couldn't do that today, that's for sure. Yeah.
And what'd you shoot the following week on your
where was that regionals?
Turlock. No, it wasn't regionals. Turlock. It was right before. No. Yeah.
It was right before regionals, though.
No,
I think it was at Turlock.
It was Turlock, but that wasn't regionals. Regionals was in Texas. And then I remember Brett was, so during the practice round, you were trying to I think hide that you had a stress fracture. I can't remember, but you were riding on the back of the golf cart. And then Brett was smart enough to hit you in the nuts through the cart that you had to jump off. And it made the fracture even worse, I think.
Yeah, we were really serious at college. No, I'm kidding. We did pretty good, but I don't think I played like amazing, Brayden, to answer your question, but I think I did okay. I think I counted all three rounds. So
yeah, you're a Goggins guy. You battled it out.
Yeah. You gotta carry the boats.
You carried the boats and the logs.
As we're like slowly going through the worst part of John's career, I think it's very appropriate to also mention that I believe it was my senior year, we used to play football during our spare times. And this one time we had a couple hours to kill before our flight home. I think we were in California. We found a local school park. And pretty much what happened is John ended up on a sex offender list.
Okay. That's also
yeah, that's exactly
false.
How I remember it, Mike.
No. Oh, no. So we were playing football at this local school and we were there for a couple hours and John had to take a piss. So what do you do when that happens? You just go find a tree. I think you didn't know that there was like a school police officer or like a neighborhood police officer.
No, it was a random public guy driving a car.
Was it?
Yeah, that's the guy who yelled at him.
Yeah. Oh, he called the cops.
But then he called the cops on. Well, I think like security ended up coming, not the real police, which is good. But I mean, like it was hidden. It wasn't like out in the open. There was literally nobody around.
Dude,
and this one guy.
It was 3 p.m. and you pissed on the playground.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but seriously, it was what a joke.
But if you can remember back to that situation, how terrified were you when that cop came up to you and started throwing around those terms?
Dude, I feel like now I'd be a little bit better because I don't know. But back then, like, I was like a, I don't know what the word is, little goody two shoe, I guess.
You're a little sheltered.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, this guy gave us a call saying a kid in, or some guys in white shorts and no shirt on playing football was taking a pee. And I'm like sitting there with white shorts and no shirt on. And we're playing football. And then I'm like, I'm really sorry, officer. Like, I hit it. I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. Like, I just like immediately just like gave in and like admitted all guilt. And he's like, it's okay. It's okay. Like, I'm like close to tears at this point, like apologizing. I think I'm gonna get deported or something, but anyways, he took down my info. He was just like a glorified, I don't know, chaperone, like just like a security guy. Literally
Paul Blart.
So but like anyways, I couldn't believe the guy driving his car called it in though. Anyways, never going back there to play football.
Well, you were, so we've touched on some the more like degenerate stories, but you were captain of the SFU golf teams at some point. I'm not sure. When did that start? Was it?
Just my last year.
Your last year. Okay. So when I got there, or I don't know, doesn't matter, but you were captain of the golf team. What additional, like some of our listeners might not be familiar with college golf. Like what additional responsibilities does a captain of a golf team, which is an individual sport, but in college you play, or in university you play like a team component as well. What additional responsibilities did you have as a captain?
That's a good question. And my answer is not great after these degenerate stories, but I think the main one is like just to kind of lead by example. Yeah. Like that's how I bought. Is Sarah's terrible inter whatever terrible after all the stories, but yeah, that's just kind of like my main like way of kind of leading, I guess you could say. Lead by example, like being really organized, having being on practice at time, being sober at practice, right, Craig?
I will say
it's
like...
not about me.
and that stuff, just making sure everyone's on the same page, like I said, like coming to practice, showing up to workouts, doing a little bit of scheduling stuff, and just kind of leading by example, I would say, is probably like the main duties of a captain, right?
Yeah, I think you did a really, really good job of that. Like I know when I got there, I had just transferred from another school, and you made like me feel really welcome and all everyone else that was new feel really welcome. And we obviously talked about some of the drinking stories, but I think some of that is part of also it's what huge. Makes a good captain is like including people in going out and having a good time. So you definitely did that. You definitely like led by example in the gym and in practice. And like, I know sometimes I wouldn't necessarily want to go play on a Saturday, and you encouraged everyone to go do that, but you also had a good time. So I just wanted to say, I thought you were a great captain and a great friend as well. So,
Oh my God. I'll say this about like SFU golf and the program we went to. So while I was there, my first year, Mike was the captain, right? And I think, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you were kind of like half in, half out, in the sense that like the team just wasn't like, you had John and Brett, but like they weren't as good as they were towards the end of their career.
I think I was captain my third and fourth year, and definitely like in my third year it still didn't feel like we were like a team.
Yeah,
and part of that fell on me as captain and not really like doing much. But fourth year felt a little bit better, but like I was probably nowhere near as like inclusive as John was.
But and I would say,
go ahead.
I would say, sorry, not to cut you off. What I would say is like, you got, from what I remember, you got better as the year went on. Mm-hmm. And like you were like very much like work hard, play hard. And I think that was something huge that John did, was it was like, yeah, we would go be degenerates till like 3 a.m. but the next day we would like go practice, and like everyone liked each other, so then like everyone's dragging someone else and giving them rides to the golf course. And the one thing I'll say about like our golf program is it's like it's been pretty good since like kind of those first couple years. And the talent now, I don't know, like Mike, you've been involved with the team, but like I went out and played with like a few of them and like embarrassed myself, but like their team now is so good, 1 through 10. It's crazy. Yeah. Like it's came a long way. Nice. But the team that John and you captained were still two of the best teams, I think, with like no offense to like me and Braden, but like far less talent.
Yeah.
Like you guys had like four good players, and it's like technically that's all that makes like a college golf team good. But I think that's what made you guys good captains, was somehow we got more out of that team than they have with more talent now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think one of the best things that John and I both did for the teams that we captained, and this is something that I know you're not technically allowed to do under NCAA rules, but we would have like on-course gambling and putting contests and things that like had competition and got guys involved. And that's something that I know Matt has mentioned to me now, that the guys just don't do as much. I don't think there's close knit as we were, and they don't really, not that gambling is a good thing, but creating that sense of competition amongst your team and amongst your peers is what I thought was a very good thing that we had.
Yeah. If they're just going out and like, if their practice or their playing rounds are not competitive and not gambling, they're not going to get the tournament pressure that you need to experience to like make a deep run through regionals or whatever.
And on a budget in university, when you're like having putting contests and playing for like $20 or $40, like that was a lot of money to you. That was a case of beer.
I'll even add on that. I think like what Craig and Mike and stuff might be like getting to and might be different like now than, or what we had versus back then, like I felt like our teams like really gelled really well. You know, and this is kind of a weird thing to talk about on like an individual sport, but like we had chemistry.
We did.
Like, you're not even passing another guy the puck or anything, but like when I made a bogey out there, hit one out of bounds or something, I'm like, fuck, I need to go make a birdie. Like not for myself, but because I got four guys relying on me. Well, I got 10 guys relying on me, but like four guys that week relying on me. And like our camaraderie and like chemistry was so good that we wanted to like do it for each other kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. And if I was playing, it was a lot of pressure because you only had three guys helping you. So I was making an 11 somewhere.
That's a good point, John, because I know on some teams where you're not as tight, you don't necessarily root for your teammates to do well. You just want to beat them so you get into the next tournament. If there's like 7, 8 to 10 guys on your team, mm-hmm. and you don't have that good relationship, like you might be kind of sour if someone else beats you and then you don't go to your next tournament or whatever. Whereas I think through my time at SFU, I was only on the team for a little bit, but everyone was always like pushing each other to do better, but everyone also wanted the common goal for everyone to play well. So that was really good.
One of the cool things that I liked, although it wasn't great for like having the team be as good as it could be, is that for the most part, we had the same guys 1 through 4 that would go to each tournament. So we'd all travel together. We'd, you know, take the team bus, take the flights, stay in hotels together, do all that stuff. And then it was either like, I think Craig or TJ or somebody else filling in as 5th spot, whoever qualified. But like just being around those same guys week after week, traveling with them, that made us very tight knit. And it was just a bonus that we all kind of like got along and we liked the same things.
Yeah, definitely. Man, you guys are going to make me cry. I'm getting emotional here just thinking about it.
Is there any one?
I miss those times.
Yeah. Is there any one tournament that really sticks out to you as your favorite from university?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I think everybody who was there probably agrees with us, but the first time that we qualified for nationals at, Texas. Yeah. So I'll give a little story here. Craig was there too, actually. The three of us, Brett and holy smokes, was it Chris?
No,
Rocco. Sorry, Rocco. Yeah. Love you, man. So it's college golf is 3 rounds. And at regionals for the listeners here, it's top 6 teams out of 20 make it to nationals, I think was what we were. And we were in the bottom half of the field after 2 rounds. So, like, we have to go out early in the morning on round 3. I think we were in, like, 12th place or something like that. We didn't play too good. And we go out in the morning. All the leaders teams are going out in the afternoon. And in the morning, we just balled out. And I don't know. We shot, like, I don't even remember what we shot, 7 or 8 under or something like that as a team, as a 4-man team.
We were like, I think, 30-something shots back, right?
Yeah, 17, it was something crazy. 17. So there you go.
17? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Do you remember what we shot round 3, Craig?
I think it was like probably – I remember everyone's – or okay, I remember I was 75, and that was the 4th score to count. You were, I think, low guy at 68. I think Mike was a couple under, and I think Kev was a couple under. So whatever that worked out to be. It was probably close to 6-7 under.
Yeah. Anyways, just like on a hard golf course too.
Hard golf course.
And then we go back to the hotel, right? And we're like, we kind of got a chance, but like not really. And then the wind picks up or whatever. And we're like watching this leaderboard. We're all sitting at the pool, like in the hot Texas sun, watching this leaderboard. We just like keep moving up and up. And our coach is like, we got to get back there. Like, we might be in playoff. And that's when the famous story of Craig on the range warming up for the playoff came.
I had 4 golf coaches on that driving range.
Yeah. Man. Anyways.
I remember one of my favorite parts of that trip, and it was such bad like sportsmanship or gamesmanship, but I didn't give a shit, is that we were watching the teams come down the 9th and 18th hole. And we were just like kind of sitting behind the trees on the grass. And every time someone would miss, we'd just celebrate.
Yeah.
I remember the team. The worst part is the guy, the one of the last guys. So it was, I think it was Colorado Springs. They were the team that was like on the bubble with us. And their last guy to come in, we were watching putt. And we knew what he was at too. And it was like, okay, if he makes this, they're in. I think it was 2 putts. It's a playoff. And 3 putts were in, and the guy 3-putted. And I just remember Mike, before he did hit his 3-putt, Mike did say, he's like, do not fucking selly, like, if he misses this. And the guy missed, like, he had like 6 feet, I think. I don't know. But he missed the putt, and then we all like turned around, we're fist bumping each other.
That tournament was awesome, though. And then we had the car ride home in this big, like, Escalade SUV, just like humping. I can't remember the song. Fancy, you guys would know the name.
I wasn't even there, but it was fancy. But
yeah. And we had like, we had no chaperone. TJ was driving it. The coaches let us take our own SUV home.
Yeah. That was like probably one of the highs of like college golf, I would say, especially from a team, because we had never made nationals before. We were just kind of happy to be at regionals that year.
Yeah. And then not to cut you off, my favorite, that's my fondest memory, because I finished the last round and thought that was my last university round ever.
That was
my last year.
I forgot about that. That's cool.
I was just going to add, we can cut this if the other stories, if the other stories are already covered, but I just asked about your favorite golf memory. Do you have a favorite non-golf memory from your time at SFU?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I think this is kind of generalizing, not like a specific moment, but I think when we lived in you and me lived in townhouses, Bray, and then with Brett and Jordan, all in one townhouse, and then 2 years over, we had another four buddies living in a townhouse. I think those were probably the house parties we would host sometimes, or just hanging out with the boys. And Mike and Craig would always come up, obviously, from
or just campus. Shot caught on a Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Those years were great. At that point, I wasn't playing on the golf team anymore, and it was just good time. It was either our house hosting a house party or like John said, two doors down with our other buddies, and every weekend was a great time. So loved it.
Yeah. Dude, I started university 13 years ago.
Oof.
It's getting sad now.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Holy shit. If you had a kid in high school, he'd almost be in university.
I don't have any kids out there running.
He said, no, I'm saying if.
He'd be 13 years old now, 14. Okay,
okay. You could have a little kid running around in Arizona or Mexico. You don't know that.
or España.
Yeah, I wanted to go into your pro career because I feel like we glaze over how good you are. I want you to tell me. What's that?
Nothing. I said I've been glazing him. As the kids say these days.
Start again. Is that a word now? Glazing?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
When you pump somebody up too much or pump something up too much.
Oh, I thought it was sexual. I thought we were
It's like the media always glazes Mahomes. Anything Mahomes does, everyone's just glazing him. Brett glazes Steph. Or whatever, that's what glazing is. But
all right. What was my question? I want to kind of just know, what's been the biggest moment in your career where you just felt like, fuck, I'm the man. I'm playing sick right now. And this is I'm really good at this. Cause I feel like we've kind of all had those moments. I want to know what's yours.
I mean, the obvious one, I think, for me is when I beat Nick Taylor in the Vancouver Golf Tour event.
And Mike Bell.
and Mike Bell. Yeah, we all battled it out. That was a good moment. I think...
Did that add anything to that round? Like the fact you were playing with Nick, were you more nervous for that round?
With Nick? Oh, Nick. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. I thought you meant Nick Bell instead of Mike. I don't know. I think going to bed that night and waking up the next morning and waiting for the round, I was probably a little definitely a little bit more nervous. I don't want to say, but once I kind of teed off and got into the round, I was still nervous, but I don't think it's any more than any other kind of tournament you're trying to close out, I guess. Me and Mike have always had this kind of conversation before. Is there a cap on nerves? Is there a limit to your nervousness? And I think at moments during those rounds, I felt at the maximum of what a person can feel nervous wise.
The most nervous you've been, you mean, or what?
No, I just think certain situations, you can't get more nervous, in my opinion. I don't know if that's true or not.
Like, regardless of how big the situation is, there's a point where you're just not going to get any more nervous.
So I'm going to do you both agree with that? You hitting your
peak nervousness there, you wouldn't get any more nervous if you were teeing it up first hole at Augusta. Because you're saying you like hit your peak already?
I don't know the answer to this, and I'm not a psychologist, but like, I don't feel like I could get any more nervous. Like, I'm already, like, my hands are shaking. I don't remember swinging kind of thing. And like you just kind of like come back to, but there's probably no cap on nerves, but I don't know. It's a weird kind of conversation or a weird discussion, but
I'll say this. If there is a more nervous situation than like what I felt in certain tournaments, I do not ever want to feel that.
Yeah, literally. But no, what it was kind of during, like, obviously I started the round leading. I think I had a 1-shot lead over Mike and a 2-shot lead over Nick Taylor to start that final round. It was weird sensation for me because I was never really trying to win, which I've never kind of been able to get back into that mindset. I was just like, it's really cliche, but I was like, I'm playing against Nick Taylor and Mike Bell, and I'm probably not going to win today. I'm just going to go do my best, you know? And I think that kind of actually helped me get out of my own way for once and kind of play better golf. But I mean, if we start that whole scenario over again, like I might win 10% of the time. And if we start the back nine over again, I'd probably win 1% of the time, if even that. And it just happened. Everything kind of came together on the back nine for me and hit some good shots and made some putts. And I think just like not trying to win helped me win that week.
So I feel do you think you can get back into that mentality now that you know that's kind of what it took?
I mean, I've tried, and some weeks you can, and some weeks you just can't get there. And it's difficult. It's a very difficult thing especially for me to do, because I'm very like, I don't know, like kind of like in the moment, I guess, like wanting to be a little bit of a perfectionist and wanting to be perfect. So like letting go of all that is like tough for me, but I do know that when I do that, I play my best golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard to get there for me sometimes.
So you grew up like
show bottle.
You grew up playing a lot of sport. Like, you're definitely, I hate saying this because I don't want to give you credit for anything, but you're probably one of the best athletes I know, if not the best. And like, that's going to piss Mike off and it's going to piss Adam off. But like, that drives both them insane, I'm sure. But the, like, your vertical is insane. You lift a weight for a day, you're jacked. And like, you just like move well in every sport. So like, you grew up playing hockey and lacrosse. Do you think that mindset that's why it's hard to get into that mindset? Is because I feel like in every other sport, it's like you're thinking about winning all the time, versus like in golf, like you said, you kind of have to like, you feel like you do better when you let go.
Yeah, I never played lacrosse, but good God.
Or sorry, what did I say? I meant hockey and basketball. Sorry, basketball.
Yeah, played basketball. Lacrosse. Yeah, you did. Hockey, basketball. I played some soccer as a kid too, and I would say like I'm quite a competitive person, and yeah, I do enjoy winning, kind of like everybody, but like also like just kind of hate to lose, you know. And that's definitely like the hockey mentality or the basketball mentality that, yeah, you grew, like I kind of grew up with, and I came to golf a little bit later, so that could have a effect on it, but I don't know the answer. I don't know.
Yeah, we can just get rid of that part, maybe.
I'll say this: two of the sickest things that I've had the pleasure of watching on a golf course was when I was caddying for John, and when I was like, "This guy's fucking good. This guy's got it." And if the first one was, I think it was maybe your first year out of university, maybe your second year, you got an exemption into a Can Tour event. And I was caddying. And I remember it was your last hole on the second day before the cut. And a thunderstorm came in. And what we thought, John had about a 10-footer. And the the horn went, and we had to sit on that 10 footer for about, I don't even know how long it was, a couple hours maybe.
Yeah. Waiting yeah, for, yeah.
Couple hours to make a first cut in the PGA Tour Canada, and just like stones made it. That was super sick to watch. And then the other moment that was sweet where I felt like you turned a big corner was when we were together for your Q school, and we thought that you had to birdie the last hole the last day to get status. And it was, I think it was probably the hardest hole in the course. And you hit a pretty good drive, and you had, I don't know, 195 yards to like a back left pin with basically half of an island green. And you hit this like disgusting tight high draw to like 20 feet and buried it to get his card, which was super sick.
Appreciate it, man. Those are some good moments. I mean, like golfers have like, especially being a pro golfer, like, and you know this, Mike knows this, and like there's just so many ups and downs, and kind of the level that I'm at or was at of like mini tours and playing Canadian tour for a bit is usually more downs than ups, you know? So like those moments you like gotta like really kind of, I don't know, keep reminding yourself of, and I'm kind of pretty hard on myself as it is, so like I'm not very good at doing that either, but it could definitely benefit from more positive talk.
I have some during golf that I like can't help but think about, but do you have any moments where you like felt super low on the course or after a tournament and just wanted to like pack it in?
Oh yeah. I think we all do. I think every golf pro does. But I mean, yeah, there's more of those than like there's some players that like it just doesn't really matter, and like we all know they're gonna make it. Like yeah. Me and Mike our first Q school we went to for Canadian Tour, like Aaron Wise was there. Mm-hmm. And we're all just like, okay, there's one last spot because Aaron Wise is getting through. Right?
Anyone.
He ended up winning, obviously. And there's those kind of guys, and like you just know they're like a step above and they're ready for higher levels than they even at. And I guess the PGA Tour is doing a better job with PGA Tour U now so that those guys can kind of skip some stages. But for the majority of guys pursuing golf, like there's a lot of tough times, you know, and there's definitely good times, and the problem is everyone is so good. And there's only a limited number of cards. Like you go to Q school and there's 120 players and probably 80 of them or maybe 70 of them are good enough to make it, but only 10 get cards, you know? So it's like, it's just hard because like you feel like a lot of weeks I felt like I played pretty damn good and would miss a cut or not make money or whatnot. And it's like sometimes you're just like, what am I doing out here? Like, why am I putting myself through all this pain, like mentally? But I mean, we love the game.
But then you see Nick Taylor win a few PGA Tour events for a few million dollars, and you're like, that's fucking why right now. Like, that's what we're chasing. So,
but then I'll kind of counter it too, though. You see, like, you also see some of your buddies who have like a cushy job or something, and like a dog and a cat. I don't know. It sounds like I'm describing Braden, but like, yeah, I kind of
am. Does that sound fun?
It sounds like stability,
which is like a huge thing that we don't have. And it's something that you kind of like, after a while, you start to crave a little bit.
I know. I get it. But there's also something to be said about like chasing your dream. Whereas like going for the stable, safe job is not necessarily fun. And I don't get to play golf or whatever, but yeah, like definitely more stable.
I don't regret anything about like kind of chasing the pro golf and trying to make it and like giving up those years of my life that are like financially being kind of set back or stability wise being set back. I don't regret any of that. Mm-hmm. The one thing though is that like everybody I tell like, oh, I'm a pro golfer, like what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a pro golfer. Everyone thinks it's like glamorous.
Right.
Like everyone thinks it's like we're like Ricky Fowler and Rory out there and stuff. And like for 99% of golf, like pros, it's not like that. Like you're grinding. There's pros and cons, obviously, but like it's a lot of grinding. And there's a lot of pros too, as far as like I spent my winters in Phoenix or in Spain or in Mexico. right? So like there's pros and cons, but it's not always like as glamorous, and Mike can even talk to this too, as people think.
I'm like, this is sad to bring up, but I remember like our money games at the Raven. I remember playing against someone, and I won't say his name, and he like, we were just playing a money game, and he hit one out of bounds on 14, and he's like, I can't play for money anymore. Like, I can't eat food this week if I pay you.
Yeah. Speaking of like the false idea that it's glamorous, I think the amount of Hinge dates I went on in the past, and I put Golf Pro in my bio, and then when I told them, like, I didn't tell them how much money I make, but when I told them what it really was, they were just so disappointed. It's how you bat out of your league, though.
Got the date, still counts.
Yeah.
So, John, are you, what's your plan now? Are you still trying to play some tournaments this summer, or what's your plan going forward here?
I just took a full-time teaching job back in Kelowna, so
nice.
Kind of slowly, or quickly, actually, I guess, kind of moving on in my kind of golf career to maybe teaching pro. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to compete. Still got a lot of tournaments on the schedule I'm going to play, but I think the like going to Q school and fully chasing it year after year, I think those days are kind of behind me. Mm-hmm. Unless I kind of catch lightning in a bottle here and the game's on fire and I feel like I can give it one more go. But for now, I think I'm going to just teach all summer and just play still compete tournament wise and whatnot, but just not like at the highest level, I guess.
I'll say one thing to that, John, and I think this happens to a lot of people that either have a lot of pressure from the outside or put a lot of pressure on themselves. After I decided to kind of stop chasing it and doing the Q school thing and whatnot, I don't think I've played, I think like the best golf that I've ever played consistently has been over like the last 1, 2, 3 years, where I haven't like had that pressure of like doing it full time and actually feeling like I'm chasing it. So I think if you can kind of reset your mind in a way where you are putting less pressure on yourself and you get to this spot where you start to enjoy it again, you don't have to necessarily feel like you're grinding all the time, but you might actually enjoy just having this reset from golf, and it might change your mindset a little bit and help.
Yeah, I love that. Totally love that.
I'm trying not to burst out laughing because that doesn't happen for me. I still suck.
Yeah, Bray, you kind of took my last question, because I like just recently asked John like about a week or two ago what his plans for golf were. Did you have a, like, this is a hard question to ask, or it's a hard question to answer. When and how did you kind of decide that, and I know what it was for me, but when did you decide that you were kind of done with the chasing of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like pretty recently, I'd say. Obviously had some family stuff over the last kind of year and a half come up, and haven't been able to like grind as hard as I'd like on my game, and the situation as far as like training for golf hasn't been perfect, but I still pushed through and was playing some events and whatnot. But I went to Mexico this winter with the full intention of kind of working on the game and then going to Q school for Canadian Tour one last time, giving it kind of one more shot. But I had two rules. Like my whole career was, I was going to quit playing when either I wasn't getting any better or I wasn't enjoying it anymore. Like if I lost one of those two things, then I would stop. And I felt like it was kind of a combination between a little bit of both of those things over in Mexico. Just to like get back to where I need to be to like be competitive is like, just because of all that time off I took, is going to take me so long that I don't feel like I kind of got that time, I guess you could say. And I don't want to say like drive's gone, but like a big thing is like just like that stability, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of felt like having stability would be pretty nice, and like I'm getting a little bit older now, and having some more stability would be pretty like it's pretty attractive. So I would say it kind of happened like I would say even like just like a month ago.
Yeah.
And I felt like maybe this is, maybe I should just like take it in a different direction. But I will say, like, I'm never gonna, and I think we're all in the same boat here, like, never gonna stop golfing, never gonna stop competing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what level it's on, even if it's just like a cash game with my buddies. Like, I just love that juice of like coming down the last hole, you got like got a birdie kind of thing. And I know, Craig, you kind of never felt that, but for the rest of us, like, I just live for that. So,
do you boys have any more questions for John?
No, I think that's kind of it for me. Mike, I need a lesson soon, by the way.
Okay,
I'm gonna chat with you after. I'm gonna pay you, but I might need some like sessions. We might have to work out a plan here. I gotta do something. I'm so miserable playing golf right now. It's crazy.
Send them your 75 swing vids.
Yeah, send me some swings.
Fucking lost. No, I need to like, we need to like do some. No, work.
we can work on it for sure, but I want to see what I'm working with first.
Oh God, I don't even want to send it. It's so bad. It's like sending a nude, and like you can't make your horn look big. It's like, it's so tough.
Craig, your swing always looks visually very good though.
Like until even you if slow you're not it down, well. And then it looks like there's certain things that are just restrict me, in my opinion, from playing good golf. Like, it makes it impossible for me to play, like, consistently good golf.
Are you getting that weird laid-off position at the top again?
It's, like, laid off, open, steep, and I'm, like, standing up at impact. It is fucked.
That sounds like it. Okay. That sounds like some income for me.
Yeah, no, it's like, we might need, like, a 100 lesson pack here.
No, but we covered a lot with John today. Thanks for being so open about your life. Appreciate it.
Of course. I got one question for you guys. As kind of fresh media podcasters, what's your favorite part about doing the pod?
I think I'll just say it. I think it's just like an awesome excuse to like talk shit with three guys that I don't know, or three guys that I've known forever. And then, but then also like once we start, we've kind of been starting to like slowly bring people on. It's people that we know, but I can't wait to bring people on that I don't know as well and just like say stupid shit in front of them and see their reactions. I think that's going to be unbelievable. So I don't know about these two.
I think Craig nailed it. Like I live in Red Deer and like a lot of my good friends are in Calgary. And then a lot of my good university friends are in Vancouver or Kelowna or Winnipeg or Toronto. So I don't get to see these guys that often. So it's a good excuse, like Craig said, to just get on a call once a week, talk some shit, talk a little bit of golf. But yeah, talk with the boys, but it's also kind of making me focus a little bit more on golf. And I'm kind of like right now there's snow on the ground in Alberta, but I'm excited for the snow to melt so I can go out and play golf, because I haven't really like played any competitive golf in the last few years, and I want to chase it. I'm not going to chase it at all, but like having like Craig mentioned, having someone that I didn't know so well in the pod earlier, Chris Hevner, he is just like the biggest golf nut, and just his attitude toward golf, Chris, I know you're going to be listening, your attitude toward golf is so inspiring and like just so good that I it's like inspiring me to want to go hit balls and like maybe mix in a tournament or two this summer. So I
want 1% of what Chris has. So part, the main reason why I wanted to start the podcast is like, I like we've said, I work in the industry, and like lately, like I've really fucking like golf for me has been like getting less and less interesting, and it's like really hard to enjoy golf when you work in it. And it's like I miss, like, I know how much I do love it. And like, that's like part of the reason why it's like, oh, maybe one day I won't work in this, because I think I'll love golf so much more. But it's like, I want 1% of what Chris has. Cause like when I started playing golf, that's what I was like. Like I would watch every single tournament. I knew all these players no one's ever heard of. I wanted to practice like every fucking day and just get better. And then like now it's like, oh my God, like fuck, I have to go play because I got a tournament in 2 weeks. And then I just go drink instead.
you guys covered it. There's nothing like chatting sports with the guys is like one of my favorite things to do in the world. So this just gives us an excuse to do that.
Oh, you guys are beauties.
John, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone or anybody that you would like to cancel this week? We can let you go last if you want to think about it for a second.
Okay. Yeah. Let me think.
Okay. Am I starting off this week?
Sure. You can throw it.
Go host.
Okay. So this is going to piss some people off, but Donald Trump recorded, I believe, his 9th hole-in-1 this past week. And if Donald Trump can have 9 hole-in-1s, all which are like 100%, they definitely happen, okay? I'm canceling everyone in the world that does not have 3 or more hole-in-1s.
Oh, I love that. I thought you were going to cancel Trump, and I was about to pop off about Biden, but
no. Yeah. Canceling everyone that doesn't have at least 3.
I've only got 2, so...
You have been canceled, bro.
Oh, no.
How can you not hit it better? I don't understand. Like, I hit it so bad, and I have 4. Like, I'm legit, like, not pitching,
but,
like...
Okay, but I play maybe 10 rounds a year, though.
I played... So. Oh, no, sorry. I only played 6 at the course I work at last year. But you play more than 10 rounds a year.
No. Like, really? I don't.
I thought you were playing quite a bit of golf the last couple of years.
No.
You also were a terrific amateur and college player, so I feel like that's not an excuse.
I had 2 hole-in-1s by the time I was 17, and then stopped golfing in my 3rd year of university. So math checks out.
The math says you're canceled, actually.
All right, fine. I'll wear it. Everyone's got to get canceled at some point. For my cancellation... I am going to cancel one Mr. Jordan Spieth. He just missed another cut that's back-to-back. He missed the cut at the Players. He missed the cut here at the Valspar. He signed an incorrect scorecard earlier this year. He's like a darling on the PGA Tour. We've had a bunch of, like, this week we had Peter Malnati, like, king of the mules win. We need the darlings of the PGA Tour, the top guys to get their shit together. Wyndham's been the only one that's kind of doing his shit, and Scotty, obviously. But Jordan, wake up. I'm making money off you, betting you to miss the cut. So keep doing that. But also you're canceled because I want to see you do it. So I want it both ways here.
Okay, Greg? I'm going to cancel 2 people. So one, I'm going to start with the member at my golf course who flipped out about the driver. He also flipped out about a golf cart. So members have golf carts that, like, they're electric push carts now and it has a remote. He walked all the way down the fairway with his cart and then walked all the way back to the pro shop just to flip out on one of the back shop kids about not putting a remote on, like, his remote with his cart. And he was pissed that he walked all the way down the first hole without it. So I think he's a fucking idiot. And then number two is this. I had to look up the tweet. Dustin Kersey, he says, this was the tweet. Is Justin Thomas's career going to end up looking like David Duval's career?
I saw that.
What a fucking idiot. Like, I don't even know what to say to that. It's so dumb. Like, JT's won 2 majors. Like, Duval was insane.
Duval was so good.
He was number one during Tiger's peak.
Yeah.
How are you already trying to draw that comparison? Like, that was... So looking for, like, people to react just to get clicks, so which I did, so
so it worked. So are you canceling yourself for falling for the clickbait?
No, because I didn't, like, actually respond to it. I just clicked on the tweet and I was like, is this a parody?
John, you're up next.
Okay, I don't have very good ones, but I'm on the spot here, but I'm going to piggyback kind of off Craig a little bit. I'm actually going to cancel Justin Thomas.
Ooh, yes.
And specifically, I'm canceling Justin Thomas's putter. Because round 3, he was in contention.
Good one.
Of the Valspar. In contention. And, like, the leaderboard's, like, kind of heating up. And he goes out and shoots, I think, 80 or 81 round 3. And he had 29 feet of putts made on round 3. And I saw the stat. He made a 2'9" putt on the first hole, and that was the longest putt he made all day.
Like, did you that's see, impressive. Did you see his strokes gained that day with putter?
I think, didn't he lose like seven?
Or? Like minus 7.9 or something like that. Fucking wild.
Yeah. Like, that's got to be the, that might be the worst putting round in the history of golf. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, for like a pro, I guess you could say. That's so, a
great cancel. Great cancel.
And I'm just going to, one more. I just got to cancel. I got to cancel Kentucky's basketball program because I had them going to the Final Four. Actually, I had them. Yeah, I had them going to the Final Four and they lost round one. So,
is Calipari on the, like, how hot is his seat? Is he getting fired here?
I don't know. I don't follow college ball like that closely. I just watch March Madness, but it's hard to fire him. I think he's making like $8 million a year or something stupid.
All right. Good cancels. Very good.
I love that. Okay. I just want to thank our guests for coming on today. We love having professional athletes come on board that are successful. We love having professional athletes that have struggled. John has seen both in his career and opened up a fair amount. We also got into his university dual personalities a little bit with his drinking, which is always fun. But he remains one of the best ball strikers that I think I've probably ever seen live. But he is a much better person when he doesn't drink. So
the glazing is real.
Yeah.
You guys are too kind. Thanks for having me, boys. That was fun.
Yeah. All thanks right. for coming on, John. And thank you, listeners. We will see you all next week.
See you guys.
See you, boys. Love from anyone. She's not anyone. She's not anyone. She's not anyone. A man can never dream these kind of things, especially when she came and spread her wings, whispered in my ear the things I'd like. Then she flew away to the night. Gonna write a song so she can see. Give her all the love she gives to me. Talk of better days that have yet to come. Never felt this love.